Welcome to episode 168 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for October 6th, 2010. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, the cycling world, indeed the world in general, is up in arms about yet another allegation of a Tour de France champion doping. Plus, Jurorobic champion of the Race Across America dies, some pro cycling news from the UCI World Championships, Maryland gets a buffer law, Garmin buys Metro Gear, and a Nevada highway patrolman to be charged in the cyclist's death. Plus, a wrap-up of Interbike, product reviews of the Bike Doctor and Bike Repair iPhone apps, and a review of the Fazari Foray CR5. Plus, PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Great to have you back with us. It is also great to have our friends Jensen USA back as the sponsor of yet another episode of the Fredcast. Go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast for great deals on bikes, clothing, components, accessories, everything for your cycling lifestyle, including something that I think is awesome. Jensen USA is now the new home on the web for the entire Life is Good line of products, including my favorite shirt, something that I bought recently from Life is Good, shirt that simply says, what else? Enjoy the ride. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes to where you can get that shirt, but simply go to thefredcast.com and click that link on the right-hand side, or go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast to pick up your Life is Good apparel, whether it's the sleep t-shirt that has a bike on it, or whether it's the Enjoy the Ride t-shirt, or any of the great Life is Good apparel. You know that you're going to get great prices and great service by simply going to jensenusa.com. So go check it out. Go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast or go to thefredcast.com and click the link on the right-hand side of the page. We can't thank Jensen USA enough for sponsoring the Fredcast, and we can't thank you enough for supporting Jensen USA. Well, as we move on to the news tonight, it may be deja vu all over again, because what has been all over the sporting news, especially the news in the world of professional cycling, is the positive A and B sample tests from Alberto Contador during this year's Tour de France. And actually, I have to be honest, this is one of the reasons why I sort of delayed the show by a couple of days. I wanted to watch and see as more news accounts came out, because when this news first broke, and let me back up and tell you what the news was specifically. Initially, the news was that Alberto Contador had tested positive for the drug clenbuterol. Now, clenbuterol, normally used in humans to treat asthma. Obviously, if that's the case, it helps open up blood vessels, which could be useful for a professional cyclist, especially after 2 or 3 weeks of cycling, in some cases at high altitude. Also, is a drug that is used sometimes illegally by farmers, in this case, livestock farmers, to increase the growth of their livestock. Alberto Contador claims that if his sample showed clenbuterol, it must have been because of some Spanish beef that was brought across the border by a friend and associate from Spain into France, because the team chef for Team Astana complained about the lack of quality beef in France. And Contador says that he specifically remembers eating this Spanish beef, that he remembers that everyone on the team had some, but that the next day he was the only member of the team that was tested. The amount of clenbuterol that was found in Alberto Contador's test sample was actually quite small, much smaller, by the way, than the amount that is required by the World Anti-Doping Agency to be detectable by a WADA laboratory. However, clenbuterol is a substance that has no minimum limit. In other words, if it is found in your sample, then it doesn't matter how little is found, you would be presumed to have been guilty of doping. And we've seen plenty of cases in the past where a rider has inadvertently ingested a drug. Remember the guy with the Vicks inhaler and all of the other things that have gone on in the past. Inadvertent or not, if that drug is found in your system, you are presumed to have doped. And the UCI has provisionally suspended Alberto Contador as a result of this test. Now, initially, I was on the fence about this whole situation because it seemed possible, right, that if this drug, clenbuterol, is used by livestock farmers to increase the growth of their livestock, it's entirely possible that this may have gotten into a tainted piece of beef, and that could have been a problem for Alberto Contador. However, it's recently come out that what was also found in his sample were high concentrations of plastic, specifically something called DEHP. Now, DEHP is something that's found in IV bags. So let's think about this for a second. We've heard before about professional cyclists who have taken part in autologous blood doping, by which they take samples of their blood from the preseason when their red blood cell count is high, and then they infuse that later into themselves during the height of competition when their red blood cell count is naturally low. Red blood cells necessary in order to transport oxygen to the muscles and therefore increase performance. So imagine if earlier in the season, and this is hypothetical, but imagine if earlier in the season, Alberto Contador was storing his own blood. Imagine if at that time he was also using clenbuterol, then stored his blood, put it into IV bags, and then infused it during the rest day at the Tour de France when he was, according to him, when he ate this Spanish beef, and then he was tested. That might explain the presence of DEHP and clenbuterol in his system. Despite all of that, Alberto Contador said that he is optimistic that this will be resolved favorably. However, he did say, quote, if this is not resolved favorably and in a just fashion, then I would have to reconsider whether or not I would come back to the bike, unquote. Contador went on sort of a press extravaganza over the weekend trying to refute these claims, saying that they should store his samples and, quote, if they want to analyze every sample that I gave during the tour in as many labs as they want, or if they prefer, they can freeze them and test them again in 3 or 5 years with whatever methods of testing they might have. They can do what they want. I have nothing to hide. Second place finisher in this year's Tour de France, Andy Schleck, who lost the yellow jersey by 39 seconds to the Spaniard, was quoted on Twitter as saying, quote, what a crazy day in cycling with the news about Contador. I only heard about it in the press. I hope he's innocent, and I think he deserves the right to defend himself now. As I mentioned earlier, the UCI has provisionally suspended Alberto Contador, but seems to be giving him plenty of time for this result to be challenged, almost giving him a bit of the benefit of the doubt, perhaps because of the fact that the German laboratory that found these results is able to detect such small amounts, in this case, 50 picograms of clenbuterol in the sample. I mean, that's a minuscule amount. They seem to be giving him a pass, again, perhaps because of that, or maybe because the UCI is hoping against hope that they don't have another Tour de France champion who has been involved in doping. This is a story that is very much in flux, one which seems to bring out new aspects every single day. I think we may have weeks before maybe even months before it's finally finished and before a final result comes out. There's a lot going on here. For me, well, initially, as I said, definitely very much on the fence. However, with more and more information coming out that seems to point to the possibility of blood doping, I'm beginning to get quite skeptical. We'll see how it comes out. No matter how it comes out, as far as the final test results and the final adjudication against or for Alberto Contador. Contador himself over the last few days said, you know, unfortunately, his reputation is already besmirched simply because of the allegations in the press. And along with the Contador reputation goes the reputation of professional cycling. People I've spoken to over the last few days, their attitude has simply been, huh, well, there you go again. Another cyclist who's doping. Well, you know what? They all dope. And so I think that cycling suffers as a result. Very tragic, no matter which way it goes, because once again, cycling's name, professional cycling's name, is dragged through the mud. Sad news in the world of another type of cycling contest when we heard earlier in the week that five-time Race Across America winner Jure Robic was killed as a result of injuries he suffered in a traffic accident near his home in Slovenia. He was hit by a car about 5K from his house on a narrow mountain road near the town of Jesenice. In case you're not familiar with Jure Robic, he was 45 at the time of his death. Again, he won the Race Across America five times in 2004, 2005, 2007, 2008, and 2010. And he is also the holder of the 24-hour record. Very sad to report the death of Jure Robic on September 24th, 2010. Another death on the mind of cyclists, specifically in Texas this week, is not a report of a death of a cyclist, but in this case, the report of a death of a jogger as a result of injuries she suffered in a tragic accident that occurred last week on the Katy Trail. Now, the Katy Trail is a rails-to-trails section out near the airport in Dallas. It is the site of the former Missouri-Kansas-Texas Railroad, or MKT. People called that Katy, hence the name Katy Trail. What happened was, tragically, Lauren Huddleston was jogging, wearing headphones, and she turned abruptly into the path of a cyclist, and she was struck and seriously injured, taken to hospital, and then died a few days later as a result of her injuries. This has sparked sort of a firestorm of controversy in the Dallas area about the use of this multi-purpose trail by cyclists, joggers, walkers, dog walkers, etc. And as a result, on the website for the Friends of the Katy Trail is the following announcement. The Friends of the Katy Trail extends its condolences to the family of Lauren Huddleston, who died as a result of an accident on the trail. The Friends of the Trail has an ongoing dialogue with the City of Dallas about ways to improve safe use of the trail. In the wake of this accident, the Friends will increase its effort and work with the city to address ways to prevent further accidents on the trail. And then they give some tips. And I got to tell you, because as I travel or the various places where I've lived and ridden, I think that these are great tips for anybody using a multi-use trail. Here are their guidelines. Keep to the right. Announce passing on the left when passing someone in front of you. Always look both ways before moving across the trail. Maintain a safe speed and remain in control at all times. Watch children carefully. If using headphones, keep the volume low so you can hear those behind you. Keep pets on a short leash. Stop and look for traffic before crossing at streets. Now, Lauren's father, Carl Huddleston, said, quote, "I pray that none of you will ever have to go through this process. This is horrible, but it has a purpose, one of which may be to save several lives, and Lauren would be thrilled to know that she could do that." So listen, I get this request from joggers all the time when they say, oh, you're a cyclist. You're this famous podcaster who talks to cyclists, could you ask him to let us know when they're passing? Could you ask them to yell out, passing on your left or on your right? Whatever you're doing, announce your intentions. Now, in this case, Lauren was wearing headphones and quite possibly didn't hear the cyclist approaching. So if you're a jogger and you're wearing headphones and you're on a multi-purpose trail, turn the volume down. Same for you cyclists. Either turn the volume down if you're wearing headphones or take one ear out so that you're always aware of your surroundings and that you can make sure that you and your fellow trail users go home to your families safely. And if, as Carl Huddleston said, if that is the benefit that comes out of this tragedy, then in his words, Lauren would want that most of all. A few weeks ago here on the Fredcast, we talked about a proposal in St. Charles County, Missouri, to ban bicycles from narrow, semi-rural roads. Thankfully, that proposal died in the county council on a vote of 6-0, and even the bill's sponsor, Councilman Joe Brazil, voted against the measure. Brazil saying that although most of the residents in his district still believe in the need for a ban, he says that there may be better alternatives requiring permits or special equipment that may be better options in the end. Specifically, they're thinking about a system of color-coding roads on maps and signs based on visibility, speed limit, and traffic level. What they're thinking about is also perhaps lowering speed limits on some of those roads that the residents were concerned that when they came around corners and went over the or went over the rise of hills, that when they encountered cyclists, that it created a dangerous situation. So alternate bills also might require organized events with 25 or more riders to get permits to use roads in the unincorporated areas of the county and also work out safety plans. Not a bad idea if you think about it. Also, it might require bicycles on certain stretches to have mirrors and a rear light and rear reflector. So nice to hear that the bike ban was defeated. It's also not such a bad idea to think about some other measures that would keep cyclists safer and also make motorists just a little bit more comfortable with bikes on those stretches of road. In the world of professional cycling, last week was the UCI Road World Championships in Australia. The beginning event this year was the under 23 men's time trial, a distance of 31.6 kilometers, two laps of 15.8 kilometers each. And this year it was won by Taylor Finney from the United States. Finney taking first place in a total of 42 minutes, 50.29 seconds, beating Luke Durbridge from Australia by 1 minute and 90 seconds in second place. Third place going to Marcel Kittel from Germany. Fourth to Nelson Oliveira from Portugal, and fifth going to Dennis Rohan from Australia. Meanwhile, in the women's elite time trial, first place going to Great Britain's Emma Pooley, second to Judith Arndt from Germany, third to Linda Melanie Vilmusen from New Zealand, fourth to the United States' Amber Nebin, and fifth to Jeannie Longo-Ciprelli from France. In the men's elite time trial, Fabian Cancellara took his fourth world championship on the 45.6 kilometer distance in 58 minutes, 9.19 seconds. 1 minute, 2.75 seconds behind. Second place went to David Miller. Tony Martin took third, Richie Porte fourth, and Michael Rogers from Australia in fifth. Sixth place going to Koos Morenhout. Seventh to Luis Leon Sanchez. Eighth, Dave Zabriskie. Ninth, Maciej Bodnar. And tenth, Gustav Larsson from Sweden. Moving to the road race events, the men's under 23 road race was 159 kilometers. It was won by Australia's Michael Matthews in 4 hours, 1 minute, and 23 seconds. Second place going to Germany's John Degenkolb. But two-way tie for third goes to Taylor Finney from the United States and Guillaume Boivin from Canada. And fifth place going to Arnaud Démare from France. In the women's road race, 127.2 kilometers. First place going to Italy's Giorgia Bronzini in 3 hours, 32 minutes, and 1 second. Second place going to Marion Vos from the Netherlands. Sweden's Emma Johansson takes third. Fourth place going to Great Britain's Nicole Cook. And fifth place going to Germany's Judith Arndt. And then finally, in the men's Professional Road Race World Championships, a race of 257.2 kilometers. The final victory and the rainbow stripe jersey going to the God of Thunder, Norway's Tor Hushovd, in 6 hours, 21 minutes, and 49 seconds. Second place to Matty Breschel from Denmark, Australia's Alan Davis in third, Italy's Filippo Pozzato in fourth, Belgium's Greg Van Avermaet, in fifth. Sixth to Oscar Freire from Spain. Seventh, Alexander Kolobnev from Russia. Kazakhstan's Asan Bazayev in eighth. Japan's Yukiya Arashiro in ninth. And Roman Feilu from France in 10th place. The next major event and the last of the season in professional cycling takes place on October the 16th, a week from Saturday. The Giro di Lombardia, one of those one-day classics taking place in Italy, will have results for you as soon as they are in. A couple of notes about next year's 2011 professional cycling season. The gold medal winner in the men's under 23 time trial and the bronze winner in the under 23 road race, Taylor Finney, has signed not for Team Radio Shack in 2011, but has moved from the Trek Livestrong development squad for Radio Shack over to Team BMC for 2011. Surprising a lot of people in doing that, but again, Taylor's got to do what is right for Taylor. I think he's been very appreciative of the advantages and the opportunities he's been given by Team Radio Shack and Lance Armstrong. Also, Velo News is reporting that, as you know, well know, there have been a couple of seasons of some very confusing calendars where we've had a world calendar, a pro tour calendar, where we've had the grand tours in, not in the calendars. The UCI has now announced that there will be 26 races in 2011, and those will include the Pro Tours and some of the most famous single-day classics. The 2011 UCI World Tour will begin in January with the Tour Down Under, then heading to Paris-Nice in March, also including in March Tirreno-Adriatico and Milan-San Remo, Volta a Catalunya, and Ghent-Wevelgem. In April, Tour of Flanders, Tour of the Basque Country, Paris-Roubaix, Amstel Gold, Flèche Wallonne, Liège, Bastogne-Liège, and the Tour of Romandie going all the way to May the 1st. One race in May, the Giro d'Italia from the 7th through the 29th. Then in June, the Dauphiné Libéré, the Tour of Switzerland. Moving on till July, when of course we get the Tour de France. And on July the 30th, the Classica San Sebastian. July 31st through August 6th, the Tour of Poland, then the Eneco Tour and the Vuelta a España going until September the 11th. Also in August, Vattenfall Cyclassics and the GP West France Bleuet. In September, the Grand Prix de Quebec and the Grand Prix de Montreal. And then finally on October 15th, the Giro di Lombardia or the Tour of Lombardy. Now, as part of this announcement, the UCI says that the 18 Pro Tour teams will have the right to and be obliged to participate in every race. There will be up to 4 teams allowed into the Grand Tours and 7 additional teams in the other races. All of those can be filled by UCI Pro Continental squads as chosen by the organizers. But again, VeloNews goes on to say that Giro d'Italia race director Angelo Zomegnan said, quote, "For us, the organizers, this changes nothing. We're going to stay with the 2008 agreement." And as you'll recall, that agreement said that the first 17 teams of the world rankings established at the end of 2010 would be automatically selected, and the other teams would receive wild cards from the organizers. So once again, this whole UCI Grand Tour rivalry rears its ugly head. So it sounds like we have an agreement for 2011, but it also sounds like there's still a little bit of turmoil and turbulence to come. 2 years ago at the Tour de France, many of us cheered as a phenom by the name of Bernard Cole raced to third place overall in the general classification at the 2008 Tour de France. It turned out Cole was a fraud. No phenom indeed. He was able to achieve his feats through the use of the blood booster Cera, C-E-R-A. He admitted to it, and shortly after that, he retired from professional cycling. Bernard Cole was in Colorado Springs last week at a conference of the United States Anti-Doping Agency, and this was their annual symposium on the science of detecting cheaters. He spoke to the scientists there and said, quote, "People know in cycling that it's not possible to win the Tour de France without it," meaning doping. He said it's 3 weeks, 3,000 kilometers, and you climb the equivalent of Mount Everest four times. That's just not possible. Cole was in front of this group to try to help them detect and catch cheaters in professional cycling and other sports in the future. According to Bernard Cole, quote, "Floyd Landis won the Tour de France, and his average speed was 40 kilometers per hour. This year, it was Alberto Contador, and it was also about 40 kph. It was nearly the same average speed. Landis was doped. Maybe in 10 or 15 years, you can win without drugs if we work with the anti-doping movement." Now, despite what seems like an accusation, Cole did say that he didn't want to speculate on whether Contador cheated. Moving away from professional cycling now, I recall when I lived in Los Angeles, I used to ride a lot from either the city to the valley, or the valley to the city, and then a lot of times up and over Mulholland Drive. And in order to get from one side of the hills to the other, if you went on Sepulveda Boulevard, you had to go through a tunnel. This tunnel sort of made famous in the Warren Beatty movie, Heaven Can Wait. You may recall from that movie from oh so long ago that Warren Beatty played a professional quarterback who was out cycling on that stretch of road, went into the tunnel, and was struck and killed by a car. Now, that was fiction. All of us obviously live in reality. That tunnel now has a warning light for cyclists. And when you ride up to one end of the tunnel, you press a button before you enter and a light flashes, alerting motorists to the fact that you are riding your bike in that darkened tunnel. Well, the city of Santa Rosa has taken a tip from what is going on in Los Angeles at that tunnel, and they've now added a flashing warning light to a section of road called Montgomery Drive. Now, according to Bill Ellis, Santa Rosa's traffic engineer, quote, "It's a narrow section and there's a fair amount of traffic. There's not much shoulder and cars and motorists travel at a higher rate of speed than other parts of town, about 40 miles per hour. Those combined together make it a less desirable place to ride," talking about riding a bike. In Santa Rosa, a lot of Northern California known for being bicycle-friendly communities. As a result, the city has installed this new flashing bicycle beacon, as they call it, to alert drivers of the presence of cyclists on the road. Now, contrary to the way that it works in Los Angeles, where you have to ride up and push the button in order to activate the light, in this case, the flashing light is activated by cyclists simply riding over a sensor buried in the pavement. That turns on the light for about 4 minutes, which is supposed to be the amount of time it might take a rider to go the 1.5 miles from one end of Montgomery Drive to the other. A great idea. I present it to you here not because if you're in Santa Rosa, you don't already know about this, because if you're in other parts of the country or indeed other parts of the world, this is a great idea that you might consider for parts of your town or your city where the roads are narrow and a lot of cyclists are riding, and this might be a great thing to install, or talk to your city council or the city managers about thinking about installing to keep you as a cyclist safe on the road. Speaking of keeping cyclists safe, those of you who are cycling in the state of Maryland will be pleased to know that you now have a 3-foot buffer law in your state, which not only requires motorists to give you the right of way when you're out there on the roads, but also requires them to keep 3 feet of space between their car and you on your bike. The penalty for motorists who cause a crash that involves a bike, pedestrian, or motorcycle face up to a $1,000 fine, the suspension of their driver's license, and 3 points on their driver's license if there's a crash where there's a violation of right-of-way and serious injury. These kinds of laws are sweeping the nation, indeed the world. They're really good things. Put a little bit of teeth in law enforcement's ability to keep you safe out there on the road, and something that I definitely advocate for all across the country. And while we're talking about your safety on the road and the danger of cars, our friend Fritz over at Cyclicious reports recently on the passage and signing of California's SB 1318, signed into law by Governor Schwarzenegger last week. This law has, according to Fritz, 28,000 words, and it includes a new version of California's vehicle code 21755. The reason that this came about is because, think about for a moment, if you're riding in a bicycle lane and somebody stops their car to the left of the bicycle lane and opens the passenger door and you get hit. Well, this happened in 2004 to Mike Smith, riding in a bike lane on Market Street in San Francisco. He was doored by someone exiting a taxi cab. He was in the bike lane. They were to his left. And it would seem like Mike should be totally not at fault in this case and be able to recover from either the taxi cab driver or the passenger or both. However, when it went to trial, the jury said that Mike was 25% responsible for the crash because at that time, California's vehicle code 21754 and 21755 said that only, quote, the driver of a motor vehicle, unquote, can pass on the right under certain conditions. Well, the new version, California Vehicle Code 21755, just signed into law by Arnold Schwarzenegger, says that the driver of a vehicle, note that the word motor is no longer in there, may overtake and pass another vehicle upon the right only under conditions permitting that movement in safety. In no event shall that movement be made by driving off the paved or main traveled portion of the roadway, and that this section does not prohibit the use of a bicycle in a bicycle lane or on a shoulder. In other words, had Mike Smith had his accident after January 1st, 2011, he would have been 0% at fault. It would have been up to the taxi cab driver and or the passenger, who would have been 100% at fault for his accident. Kudos to Governor Schwarzenegger and the California legislature for making this very much needed change. Louisville, Kentucky, here in the United States, is known as one of the most bicycle-friendly cities in the nation. But right now, there is a very cycling-unfriendly driver out on the road that you should know about if you're planning on riding in the area. Apparently, there's an individual going around driving a red Dodge Ram pickup with a specialized license plate known as a farm tag. It's driven by a white male who's described as about 30 years old. And this jerk is out there trying to run cyclists off the road intentionally. He's trying to run them off the road. He's pulling up in front of them and slamming on the brakes, or he's driving straight at them in a very dangerous and irresponsible and, dare I say, idiotic game of chicken against cyclists. according to Oldham County Police and their officer, Chris Morris. Quote, he would go around them and slam on the brakes, causing them to almost run into the back of the truck. Or he's coming at them head on into their lane, trying to get them off the roadway. We've also got information there may be a small dent on the front quarter panel of the truck, as well as scratches on the tailgate. According to Vernon Town, a cyclist in the area who is apparently riding several thousand miles a year, quote, I wish he would deal with his problems, whatever they are, if he's taking it out on us. I'm sure it's got nothing to do with cyclists. It's just that we're vulnerable. So for those of you in the area, please be very careful and watch out for that red Dodge Ram pickup with the specialized farm tag license plate until this jerk is caught and thrown behind bars. Well, here's what I view as another road rage incident against cyclists, but apparently a court in Sweden does not agree. You may recall a few months ago we talked about competitive cyclist Andreas Gross, who faced charges of traveling on a prohibited carriageway after refusing to use the bike path in Lund, Sweden. Apparently there is a law in this part of the world that says that if there is a bike path, you have to use that and not the road. However, considering the fact that Mr. Grass is a competitive cyclist and he regularly travels at speeds of about 40 kilometers per hour, he feels that it's safer for him to be on the road than to be on bike paths, which, as we all know, are often places where we can find pedestrians and slow-moving cyclists that can be a little bit more dangerous for those of us who are going a little bit faster. So there he was riding on the road in October when a motorist came up behind him and waved instructions to him to get out of the road. Well, instead of doing so, Mr. Grass actually moved to the center of the roadway, and the motorist, who got very upset, honked his horn and eventually bumped into him from behind, causing him to fall to the ground and graze his shoulder and his knee. Mr. Grass reported the motorist to police for negligence, and the motorist similarly reported Mr. Grass to the police. And he was just fined by a Swedish court 500 kroners for his violation of that law. Stupid law, in my opinion, but for those of you who may be English speakers in Sweden, keep this in mind, because this could be you. And for those of us here in the United States and other places where these stupid laws don't exist, be thankful. But apparently motorists are not the only ones who are prone to road rage. Take the example of this cyclist in Cambridge, Massachusetts, who was honked at by a motorist. The motorist saying that she was trying to make the cyclist aware that she was planning on turning. According to police, the cyclist got quite irate, withdrew, quote, a weapon, and threatened the motorist. The victim said that she feared for her life, and then the cyclist broke the passenger side window and scraped the hood of the car. He was described as a white man with sandy blonde hair, and he reportedly fled from the scene and has not been found. Look, I've been honked at by motorists. You've been honked at by motorists. Breaking a window and scratching a hood, probably not the correct reaction, but guy on the East Coast was not the only one in the news this week, because here's a story from the West Coast, from Portland, Oregon, saying that Glenn Gans, a 34-year-old cyclist, was so upset at the actions of a motorist that he spit into the window of the van, because he said that the van came too close to him while he was riding his bike. Two men in the van got out and they got into a fight. One of the men said that he was injured when the cyclist hit him with a bike lock, and he then had to drive himself to the hospital with minor injuries. In this case, Mr. Glanz was arrested on suspicion of attempted assault and harassment and booked into jail. Glanz, of course, disputes the motorist's report, saying, quote, these guys were trying to run me over. I was just trying to protect myself. Glenn fled the scene and said, quote, I fled the scene, which I shouldn't have done, but I was freaked out and terrified. There are a lot of people who hate cyclists in Portland for whatever reason, and I think these guys were like that. However, a local newspaper does report the Glens has a 15-year history of stumbling, as they said, against road rules, including infractions for skateboarding in a prohibited area, rollerblading downtown, and in 2005, he was convicted for misusing the left turn lane, and 2 years later, for violation of bicycle equipment requirements. And finally tonight, following up on yet one more story from a previous episode of the Fredcast, the Nevada Highway Patrol is recommending criminal charges be filed against a Washoe County Sheriff's deputy in a fatal accident with a 21-year-old cyclist in July. Deputy Matt Durham, as you may recall, was responding to a call in his marked SUV, but he did not have his lights or siren on when he struck cyclist Kevin Albertson of Reno on Lemon Drive. The Nevada Highway Patrol is recommending that the deputy be charged with vehicular manslaughter, failure to use due care, and failure to maintain a travel lane. State prosecutors now are going to decide whether or not to charge Durham. Meanwhile, the 28-year-old deputy has been moved to the training division until the case has been resolved. And with that, this will end the news for this episode of the Fredcast. Well, starting our features tonight, I want to tell you that sitting here on my desk, I've got a bumper sticker from the Adventure Cycling Association. It says simply, "I dream on two wheels." And for those of you who not only dream on two wheels, but take photos on two wheels, the Adventure Cycling Association has announced their second annual bicycle travel photo contest. They are looking for a photo that captures what they call the beauty and wonder of your bicycle touring adventures, both past and present. And they say they're interested in images that showcase the wide range of bike touring experiences, road and dirt riding, rural and urban settings, scenery, people, and the emotions that come with cycling. You can enter up to 5 images. You upload your photos to their Flickr group, tag them with the word Adventure 10, no space between Adventure and 10, or you can use their web form for updating your photos. Again, up to 5 images for consideration, and you have to enter your photos by December 31st, 2010. The winner's image will be printed in the March 2011 issue of Adventure Cyclist magazine, and the first place winner will receive a 2-year membership with Adventure Cycling and a $100 gift certificate to their CycloSource store. So go ahead and check it out. There are links in the show notes. If you've got some great cycling photos, show them off to the world by entering the Adventure Cycling Photo Contest 2010. On the last episode of the Fredcast, I told you that I was getting ready to head to Las Vegas for the final edition of, or the final Las Vegas edition of the Interbike Trade Show as it prepares to move not only from September to August, but also from Las Vegas to Anaheim in 2011. Well, I did attend the show, and what a week it was. Starting with the outdoor demo, followed by our tweet up, and then, of course, 3 days indoors at the Sands Convention Center. A couple of the highlights of the show for me, obviously, first and foremost, the opportunity to once again participate in the filming of the Interbike.tv video segments, where we went out and looked for interesting booths, products, and personalities to bring to you via video. Now, we shot a ton of videos. They were hosted by me, and they were also hosted by Aki Sato from Sprinter de la Casa, and those are still being edited. For right now, you can see them at interbike.tv, but I'll also be adding those to the Fredcast site as soon as I can get some good embed links to put them up. In the meantime, really a fraction of the videos that we filmed are online, and I think some of the best are still yet to come. I had a great day, particularly on the last day of the show, going around and filming a number of the nonprofit organizations that were at Interbike. And, you know, I don't think that those groups get enough coverage when people go out to cover Interbike, because they always want to do the widgets and bits and electronic gizmos and new bikes. But, you know, I think there's a lot of great work being done by nonprofit organizations in and around the bike industry. And so we wanted to bring some of that to you. Those will be coming up and available in the next days and weeks. And I'll keep you updated here and on the Twitter feed and on Facebook about when all of that will become available. So certainly one of the highlights was definitely filming those Interbike.tv segments. Obviously, another big highlight is getting a chance to see all of my friends and colleagues, both on the media side of the business, but also in the bike industry itself. You all know that I've been in the bike industry since 1989, and so it's nice to see a lot of my old friends. A lot of us are getting a little grayer. Some of us are getting, you know, a little bit larger around the midsection, but you know what? We're still all great friends, and it's really great to get back together with all those people at least once a year, including at the Tweet Up. And thank you to all of you who donated product and all of you who came to the Tweet Up, including some Fredcast fans from the Southern California and Nevada areas who simply came by to say hi and donate and enjoy. What was really cool at the Tweet Up, not only the $2,000 that we raised for diabetes and multiple sclerosis, but also the venue at Emeril Lagasse's Stadium at the Palazzo, fantastic venue. The preview of Cycle Film's video about the Cycle Passion calendar and some of the models / cyclists who came to the Tweet Up, but also Gary Fisher coming to the Tweet Up and donating some really just sort of one-of-a-kind items. So that was just spectacular. Among the products at the show that I think I was most taken with, first of all, Le Mans Fitness's new Revolution trainer. I was very taken with that. I actually did two videos, one at Outdoor Demo talking about the trainer itself, and then one indoors where I had an opportunity to sit down with Greg Le Mans and talk to him about the product. A very innovative product. I've talked a lot about trainers. I talked to you about my Compi trainer, about Wind trainers and other trainers, but the Le Mans Revolution, I was struck by the fact that when I got on a bike on the Revolution, the realistic road feel, perhaps the most realistic of any trainer I've ever been on. So that was probably one product that really struck me. I was also struck by the sheer number of iPhone cases that I found at the show, and not just cases. We've talked about some of those in the past, but cases that include Ant Plus technology so that you can use your iPhone as your bike computer and it can gather data from power meters, from speed sensors, cadence sensors, and also heart rate monitors. So just a plethora of those around the show. And we shot a number of videos about those. One of the other products that got a lot of buzz at this year's Interbike was the new Look / Polar pedal, a Look KO pedal that includes in the pedal a power meter. And I think that that got a ton of buzz at the show. And perhaps as a result of that, a acquisition also got a lot of buzz at the show. And that was the acquisition by Garmin of MetroGear, because MetroGear is the creator of a pedal-based power solution for cycling, thereby allowing Garmin in the future to start adding pedal-based power meters to its offering with its Edge cycle computers. And certainly a lot of buzz also around the new Garmin Edge 800 color touchscreen cycle computer. Hopefully have more information and a review of that on an upcoming episode of the Fredcast. And then finally, definitely a highlight every year at Interbike was our opportunity to do a live televised version of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast from the Interbike Media Center. This year, we had a large crew there on the stage. As Carlton Reed noticed from his viewing of the show live from his home in Newcastle in England, because unfortunately Carlton couldn't be with us this year at the show. The couch was gone. We were all on sort of tall stools. And with me on the stage were from the Spokesman podcast, Tim Jackson from Mozzie Bicycles. By the way, they have a great new carbon bike, the Evoluzione, that looks phenomenal. Sitting next to him was Rich Kelly from Interbike. Sitting next to Rich was Neil Brown from Carolina Cycling News, formerly of Road Magazine. And also on the stage was our friend DL Byron from Bike Hugger. That was a lot of fun. I'm waiting for the video to be sent to me from the folks at InsideCycling.tv who did the media center this year. As soon as that comes, we'll post that up on the spokesman website, both as a video and an audio file. So just a quick wrap up from Interbike this year. It was a really great show. A lot of optimism in the bike business this year as opposed to last year and the year before. So I'm looking for great things in 2011. Just keep watching Interbike TV and thefredcast.com for more of those videos that we shot. And that should give you a real good overview of this year's show. Well, it comes as no surprise to most of you that I am an iPhone user and have been for a number of years. And there's a couple of iPhone apps that I want to talk to you about today that are intended to help you learn more about how to properly maintain your bicycle. I received review copies of the Bike Repair and Bike Doctor iPhone applications. And yes, there are links in the show notes to both of those apps. And I decided to put them through their paces, use them when I had questions about what I needed to do to repair my bike and see how they would work both for me as a more experienced cyclist and a more experienced bike maintainer, if you will. And then I thought about how these apps would work for novice cyclists as well. Now, the two applications do have the same basic intent, but they're presented in different ways. Bike Repair presents the items in an FAQ format, sort of a frequently asked question. So for instance, it says, I have a problem with my, and then you can choose whether it's your derailleur or your wheels. And then it goes through and it says things like, well, I have a puncture, or I'm having trouble shifting on the rear derailleur. It makes it easy to find what you want to do and what you want to fix. Bike Doctor, on the other hand, looks at things in a different way. First of all, you can filter the available repairs that will be presented to you on the screen, depending on whether you have a road bike, a hybrid bike, or whether you have a mountain bike. And what it does is it basically gives you basic categories: general, brakes, crankset, handlebar, wheels, etc. And then once you're there, it shows you how many repairs there are available in the application. So for instance, in the case of wheels, replacing a broken spoke, truing a wheel, puncture repair, replacing an inner tube, etc. It also has a nice section on doing a complete bike safety check, which I found to be a simple sort of pre-flight. But I also thought that there's a lot more that you could add. You know, for instance, if you have a carbon bike and things like that, if you're going to do a complete bike safety check. Now, generally, both applications suffer from the same issues, things that bother me a lot, specifically the occasional grammar and or spelling errors. Let me give you an example of a couple of those. For instance, Bike Repair, when it wanted to talk about steering, used two R's instead of two E's, so it came out as staring. Bike Repair, when it was talking about puncture repairs, told you to use tire levels, L-E-V-E-L-S. Now, minor annoyances, but they are things that get in the way, and I kind of feel like those kinds of little errors leave you feeling a bit of a lack of confidence in the rest of the advice that the two programs give you. Now, what I did was I decided to compare, simply by choosing at random, three repairs that you might do. So I started first with rear derailleur adjustment, because this is something that for a lot of cyclists feels like a little bit of voodoo or special mojo that you need to have. So I looked first at rear derailleur adjustment. I found that the Bike Repair app really only dealt with barrel adjustment and didn't adequately address either which chainring you should be on when you're doing your adjustments or the high-low limit screws. I thought, however, that Bike Repair's photos were better than Bike Doctor's with clear identification of parts and adjustment points. Meanwhile, on Bike Doctor, it did go into great detail on using limit screws, and it did address chainring choice. But in one case, I found the order of instructions a bit confusing, and I didn't find that the photos changed very often as you went from one step to the other. So it left you feeling a little bit hesitant about exactly what adjustments you needed to do. On headset adjustment, again, something else that I think a lot of people look at as a bit of voodoo, I found that both gave you simple instructions for both threaded and threadless headset. Bike Repair I found a little bit too simple, but you did get the choice. On Bike Doctor, in that case, I felt that they had better photos than they did for the rear derailleur adjustment section. But again, since they're not pointing out specific parts, I found that if you were a bit of a neophyte, it might be a bit confusing or ambiguous. Then I looked at changing an inner tube. Again, Bike Doctor wins on better photos and explanations. And neither one of them really cautioned at the end of the repair about checking for possible points for pinch flats to occur before you inflate the tire. Personally, once I've got the inner tube in there, I'd go around the entire bead to make sure that I don't have inner tube stuck between the rim and the bead of the tire, and something that neither of them really addressed. Again, in both cases, grammar and spelling can be a problem and can be distracting. In each case, however, instructions are simple, point you in the right direction, but I wouldn't say that they're necessarily detailed enough for a total novice, and in some cases, they're a bit too simple for somebody who has a lot of experience. I thought that the photos in Bike Doctor were a bit better. In each case, however, I would like to see either videos resident in the applications themselves or at least links that would take you out to the YouTube application where you can look at specific videos on how to do these individual repairs. In both cases, when something became too advanced, each application did caution the user to go see their local bike shop. I really like that. I think that that's definitely the right thing to do. I was surprised not to find a few more safety warnings. A lot of times when you read an instruction manual, you see things all in caps or maybe in bold when something is really important and something you definitely need to pay attention to. In one case, one of the applications said to remove the quick release, but it really didn't help with neophytes about how to properly remove or replace a quick release. And considering all of the issues that have either been in the news or that have come up in the bike industry over the past decades about quick releases, I was sort of surprised about that. Now, each application is $1.99 available in the iTunes App Store. Bike Repair, however, offers a light version of the app with just a couple of repairs in there, just to give you an idea as to whether or not you want to spend the $1.99. If you are looking for an application that you can use when you're out on the road, when you need to make some adjustments to your bike, I would say that either one of them is going to give you some basic pointers as to which direction to go into. But if one of them was to win out as far as detail, I would have to say that Bike Doctor does a better job with its photos, while Bike Repair tends to do a better job with its descriptions. I'd love to see the two developers maybe get together and make one really great app out of the two. I suppose if I was going to be rating these on sort of a 5-star scale, I think each of them would probably get about 2.5 stars. Almost there, but not quite. But certainly I can't say that either of them is without their worth. I have noticed that both of the developers have updated each app fairly frequently, so I think that you can expect that over the next months, each of them is going to get even better. So I can't necessarily say that, yes, go out and buy either of them, but at $2 a piece, you certainly can't go wrong if you buy one or the other, again, to point you in the right direction when you're stuck. Remember though, if you don't know what you're doing, if you're timid, if you're just not sure about what you're doing when it comes to maintaining and repairing your bike, head down the street to your local bike shop and take it to the professional mechanic. Have him or her repair or maintain your bike, and while you're there, give you some tips on some things that you can do at home on your own. So again, that's the Bike Doctor and Bike Repair iPhone apps, and yes, there are links in the show notes. Finally tonight, I want to give you a final review of my long-term test of the Fazari Foray CR5 carbon road bike. Now, I told you a couple of weeks ago that I had the opportunity to go down to Fazari, not far from where I live here in Utah, and pick up a Foray CR5 for a long-term test. Now, the Foray CR5 is their top-of-the-line road bike, and I want to remind you about their business model before I give you the review of the bike. Their business model is very simple. You can't buy a Fazari bicycle in an independent bike shop. Your local bike dealer will not be carrying Fazari. Fazari sells and markets their bicycles completely on the internet at Fazari.com, two Z's, Fezzari.com. And so what I did was, although I was able to go pick mine up and talk to the folks at Fazari, I ordered mine as if I had done it online. And one of the things that Fazari does when you buy a bike from them is they put you through their 23-point custom setup. So what I did was I went online, I chose the bike, and then I went through and they had me measure a variety of dimensions on my body, arm length, shoulder width, inseam, things like that, so that when I sent them that information, they set up my Fazari specifically for my measurements. And go back in that previous episode of the Fredcast for a more detailed description of what they do. So if you go onto Fazari.com and you go to buy a bicycle from them, you would look for the bicycle that you're interested in, choose that bike, and then go through the 23-point setup. They would then send it to you completely set up, so that all you need to do is do a little bit of reassembly and you're literally ready to go out and ride the bike as if it had been fitted for you on the bike shop floor. Now, as I mentioned to you several weeks ago, when I first rode my Fazari, I noticed there was a little bit of just not total comfort on the bike. And what I found was a very extremely minor, maybe 2-degree change in the tilt of my saddle was all that was necessary for me to feel comfortable on the bike. And indeed, I rode it a week later in a Century and felt very good still at the end of that ride. So while their 23-point setup is not a full $250 to $400 custom fitting that you would get if you went to someone who had been specially trained in fitting a bike, it gets you much, much closer to a comfortable, properly fitting bike than you would in most cases by simply picking up a bike off of a dealer's floor. So keep that in mind, because my experience has been that when you buy a bike from a dealer, a lot of times they will simply do your standover height, do your saddle height, and that's it. So I definitely found that the 23-point setup was much better in getting me much closer to where I needed to be. But let's talk about the bike itself. And then after that, let's talk a little bit about buying a bike over the internet. So the Fazari Foray CR5 is a full custom frame. And one of the things that's instantly noticeable when you first look at this bike is that Fazari has put a lot of thought into the design of the frame itself, the chassis of the bike. There are custom tube sizes. There are specific features of the bike, a larger bottom bracket section, a wishbone section on the rear seat stays on the bike. You can tell by looking at the chain stays that there's been thought put into both lateral stiffness and vertical compliance. In other words, making sure that when you stand in the pedals, you're transmitting your power into the road, but at the same time, you're not getting beat up on a long ride, say a century, with radiated road vibration into your back. When you look at the top tube, you can definitely tell that thought has been put into making sure that it meets this beefy head tube in the proper way, but at the same time that you're not putting too much weight into the tube itself. There's been a lot of thought put into this. And while, yes, this frame is made in Taiwan, what it looks like these days is that the Taiwanese manufacturers, and I do know the factory where this is being made, and they're very reputable. The Taiwanese manufacturers have gotten very, very expert at custom forming and shaping these tubes to make certain that you have the strength where you need it and that you're also not putting too much weight where you don't. And when you consider the fact that even some of the highest end names in even Italian bikes are now making their carbon frames in Taiwan, I think that you can rest assured that even though this is a Taiwanese carbon frame, you're still getting very high quality workmanship and materials. And it shows when you look at the bike. So I was very impressed with the chassis. Also with the custom matched carbon Fusari fork that goes with this frame, and then moving on to the custom stem that matches it as well. But in addition to the monocoque carbon frame, the carbon fork with its carbon threadless steerer, you're also talking about very high-end components. Dura-Ace shifters, derailleurs, and cassette, FSA K-Force cranks, an FSA K-Force bottom bracket, a Dura-Ace chain, an FSA K-Force carbon flat bar, which I found very, very comfortable. I have to say, FSA has really done a great job with that bar. It's a Fusari custom stem. It's only 88 grams. That's amazing. Also, a custom Fusari saddle and carbon seat post. That saddle, by the way, with titanium rails to make sure that you keep down on the weight. The rims, Mavic Kazerium rims, hubs, full Mavic Kazerium SL bladed spokes, and Maxxis tires. Brakes and brake levers, also Shimano Dura-Ace. This is a very high-end road racing machine. This is a bike that I think if you were going to buy it on your dealer's floor would be anywhere from $7,000 to maybe $12,000. Fusari selling it for just under $4,500 at $4,449. So a very good price, and I'll get back to that in a moment. Let's talk about how I felt about riding this bike out on the road. I put it through its paces on both long flat rides as well as and short flat rides and short climbs, and also on, as I said earlier, a long century ride. So let's talk about some of the shorter rides first. Short flat rides, just doing quick intervals. When I got out of the saddle to pedal very fast, I found that I was getting excellent power transmission into the rear wheel. When I was doing hill repeats, once again, I was not getting that pogoing that sometimes you feel on some bikes. Yet I didn't feel as I did, you know, when I mentioned this when I rode the Orbea about a year ago, and I know that Orbea has since addressed this on the Orca. I didn't feel that it was overly stiff for someone like me who's not a racer. I was getting the stiffness that I needed in order to put that power transmission into the road, but I wasn't getting beat up. And indeed, when I rode the bike on the Century, whether it was climbing or on fast descents or on just long straightaways, I felt very, very comfortable on the bike. I was getting good vibration damping through the bike, but I was still getting very good power transmission, things that are very important to me as I go out on a long ride. Especially, I'm somebody who can be prone to low back pain, and I didn't have that in riding the Fusari. For those of you who follow me on Twitter, you may remember that when I took it out on one of my first rides, perhaps my first, I said that the double Z in the name Vasari should stand for Zoom Zoom. I stand by that. Despite the fact that my Vasari was outfitted with compact on the front portion of the drivetrain, I still found that when I wanted to put the pedal to the metal on the flats or on a downhill, I was getting very fast, scary fast. And when I was climbing, of course, compact helped with that, but I was able to get up hills much faster on this bike than even my beloved Colnago. So I found that this bike, and perhaps that's partially because of compact and partially because of the lightweight, but I think it also has to do with that stiffness in the rear triangle right where you need it to make sure, as I keep repeating, you're getting that good power transmission to the road. To me, in a carbon bike, that is extremely important. I really liked this bike and I was very upset when I had to take it back. And so this was a bike that I really liked a whole lot. Now, I want to address something that a lot of you have asked me about since I first started talking about the Vasari, and that is the experience, whether it's well advised to be buying a bike of this caliber and expense over the internet. Now, I remember in the early to mid 90s, I was interviewing for jobs in the bike business between when I left Tioga and when I went to start my marketing company. And one of the companies that offered me a job was a company that had this idea about putting out a catalog that did not include specific specifications for the bike. It talked to you about the geometry and the construction of the frame. But then from that point, their concept was that you could then build up your bike by simply filling out a form and sending it in, because of course the internet and online ordering was not something that we were doing in the early 90s. Unfortunately, that model didn't work very well for them because people weren't used to doing those kinds of things mail order, especially for something high-end like a bicycle. Fast forward to 2010, and I think people are much more comfortable with ordering online, especially when you consider the kind of guarantee that goes into a bike like the Vasari. So remember, when we talked to Vasari several weeks ago, they talked to us about their risk-free 30-day, what they call unconditional money-back guarantee. Reading directly from the website, if for any reason you're not completely satisfied with your bike, simply return it in new condition within the first 30 days, and they'll refund your purchase. So if you buy a Vasari from the website, you know that if you don't like it, you can return it. So I think that that makes it much easier for you to consider buying an expensive bike online. Plus, when you consider their 23-point custom or semi-custom fit, now you sort of feel like you're going to be getting a bike. Look, you know the components you're getting. I think you're getting a quality frame. And now you know that you're getting something that's going to be pretty close to the perfect fit when it arrives on your doorstep. And then if you're not happy with it, you can take it back. Now, independent bike dealers, I think those of you who are listening to me are probably screaming at your car radio or just at your iPod or whatever however you're listening to the show, because you're saying, look, we're in a better position to show you a wider variety of bicycles. We're in a better position to find the exact right bike for you and get it fit for you correctly. I agree. A website is not able to provide you with variety. The website isn't able to talk directly with the customer, although, of course, Vasari does have a phone center that you can call and speak directly to the folks at Vasari and get advice on the bike. Certainly, your independent bike dealer is going to be in a better position to find the right bike for you. But I have a feeling, those of you who are Freds out there, you've got some experience and you've got a pretty good idea what you are looking for. My recommendation is go to your local bike dealer, compare what you're going to get from them, and consider the service that you're going to get as a result of buying the bike from them. Those are very valuable things. If you're considering the Fazari, check out their website and then make the evaluation for yourself as to the value you're getting in each case. I can't make that decision for you. I haven't personally purchased a bike online. Having dealt with the people at Fazari, looked at their operation, ridden one of their bikes, and done extensive research into what they're doing on their website, I can tell you that they're providing you with a great deal of value. But I also know that I get a ton of value out of two particular independent bike dealers, one in Salt Lake City, take that back, three, and two here in Park City. And I know that I like to patronize them as much as I can in order to ensure that they feel that they're getting as much value from me as I'm getting from them. However, you also know that I do buy a great deal of parts and accessories online through Jensen USA. And so I think in today's day and age, there is a balance between buying online and buying from your local bike dealer, and I will leave it to you to make that decision. However, having ridden the Fazari, having seen the quality that goes into it, the attention to detail that goes into making the frames, and the attention to detail that goes into their 23-point custom fit, and in looking at the value, the kinds of parts that you're getting on your bike for the prices that they're charging, I have to say that they are presenting a very, very strong value proposition, not only considering dollars spent compared to parts that you're getting, but also in performance. I was extremely impressed in the bike that I rode. I have no doubt that if you consider a Fazari for yourself, you're going to feel the same way. So going back to the previous review where I sort of talked about a 5-star rating system, I think with the Fazari, the bike that I rode, I would give it probably about 4, 4.5 stars. I was very impressed with the ride and with the construction. Having said that, I'll leave it to you to decide whether you're comfortable buying a complete bike online or whether you'd like to go to your local bike dealer. Still, I do recommend that you go check them out at www.fazari.com, 2 Z's or 2 Z's in Fazari. And as always, for full disclosure, yes, I was provided the bike for test, but that bike went right back. It was only on loan. So I got nothing out of doing this review other than giving you my opinion on the Fazari Foray CR5. Well, that's it for the feature section on this week's episode of the Fredcast. Before we get into the contact information and our PodSafe cycling music, I do once again want to thank our sponsor for this week's episode of the Fredcast, Jensen USA. I know my daughter Emily is stoked to hear that Jensen USA now has Life is Good apparel, and I hope that you will be as well. Go ahead and check them out at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. As I keep telling you, Jensen USA is providing a great selection of products at amazing prices and unparalleled customer support. Go ahead and check them out, jensenusa.com/thefredcast. And of course, thank you as well for your continuing donations to the Fredcast by going to www.thefredcast.com and clicking the donation link on the right-hand side of the page. I also want to remind you how you can keep in touch with me here at the Fredcast. Of course, best way to know what's going on here on a day-to-day basis is to follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Fredcast, so that's twitter.com/Fredcast, or on Facebook, facebook.com/Fredcast. Our website is www.thefredcast.com, and our email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to reach us by phone and leave us a voicemail that we can play on the show or not, depending on what you tell us in your message, go ahead and give us a call on the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. Well, there is just one thing left to do for this week's episode of the Fredcast, and that is to play you our PodSafe cycling music. And this week's PodSafe cycling music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by the Cadence Revolution, your weekly podcast of PodSafe music that's perfect for your indoor cycling, available at www.cadencerevolution.com. Tonight's track is by Imagine Dragons, and it's called Hear Me, There are links in the show notes to where you can find the artist and the song on iTunes. I want to thank you once again for joining us for another episode of the Fredcast as we close in on the 5th anniversary of the show. And I want to thank you for staying subscribed and for telling your friends about the Fredcast. You are the best part of the show, and it is my pleasure to have you with me for every episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. We'll be back again soon with another episode of the Fredcast, but between this show and the next, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride. Love.